Hey, Freilich Chanukah, good evening, good Erev Shabbos, everybody. Welcome back to our three ideas in 30 minutes. As always, our learning should be an aliyah for the neshama of Esther Tehila Bas Gavriel Pinchas and our refuah shleima for all those who are in need of a speedy and painless recovery. Okay, without a doubt, this week is idea number one is going to be my favorite idea. So, I don't know, I'm always wrong, but we'll see if I'm going to be wrong again this week as well. And the reason why I love idea number one is because the question, I think, is unbelievable. Question is the following. When the brothers come to Yaakov, and they say, don't forget, Shimon's been held back already, and now they come and they say, we got to take Binyamin with us. And what does Yaakov say? Vayomer aleim Yaakov. Yaakov says to them, you ain't taking, right, you already took Shimon. Ves Binyamin tikachu, and now you want to take Binyamin? Alai hayu kulana. How do you translate those words? Alai hayu kulana. So Art Scroll, in a very useful fashion, translates it as, upon me has it all fallen. What does that mean? It's all happening to me. It's almost like a woe unto me. Woe unto me. Like everything bad happens to me. That's basically what Yaakov is saying. Now you understand why Yaakov's saying that at the end of the day. You know, it's been a pretty rough couple of years for Yaakov. He thinks at this point Yosef is no longer alive. Shimon's been taken captive. Now they want to take Binyamin. So he has a right to say, Alai hayu kulana, like woe unto me. But it's a very strange word because you don't expect it from Yaakov, A. Yaakov's not like a woe unto me type of person. And B, you don't need those words at all. In other words, if I cut those three words out of the Torah, the pasuk would have read just fine. In fact, it reads in a much more clumsy fashion with those words in the Torah than without them. So what does it mean, I lie, hayu kulana?
When he comes down to Paro, you know, my life has been bad.
Right. So this is like a foreshadowing of the woe unto me. Although everyone understands that it wasn't really Yaakov complaining. But okay, we'll get to that in a couple of weeks, right? So I want to share with you a gra, the Vilna Gaon and the Kol Eliyahu. And this is quoted in a number of different places, but I'm sharing with you here in the gra himself. And he asks our question, that's the first underline, L'cha'ora, Zeo Miyusar, this is extra because don't we all know about the sons and don't we all know about the pain that Yaakov's in? So why does Yaakov have to reiterate it for us? And what are these words, Alai Hayu Kulana, what does it add to the Pesukim as well? And he says the most unbelievable understanding. He says, this is not the first time that we've seen that similar formulation of Alai in the Torah. When Yaakov was told by his mother Rivka to go and to cheat Yitzchak for the brachas, Yaakov is very afraid. What's he afraid of? He's afraid that Yitzchak is going to know that he's trying to trick him and he's going to call him out on it and it's going to cause Yaakov to be punished. So what does Rivka say to her? Rivka says, Alai kilas chabani. Don't worry. The curse will be on me. In other words, I take the hit, right? The achrayus is on me. You go to your father Yitzchak, you ask him for the brachos. If it all goes to pot, don't worry about it. Alai kilas chabani. If he curses anybody, he's going to curse me. Now, what does that mean? So the Gra explains that Rivka wasn't just saying that it's on me. But through the word alai, she says, is an acronym. And she says, don't worry, nothing bad is going to happen with your father Yitzchak because alai. There are only three bad things that are going to happen to you in your life, Yaakov. One is the Ayin, which stands for Esav. The Lamed, which stands for Lavan. And the Yud, that stands for Yosef. Okay, and that's how Rivka convinces Yaakov to go to Yitzchak, because she said there are only three bad things that are going to happen, Esav, Lavan, and Yosef. Yitzchak is not one of them. You have nothing to worry about. Now we understand, says the Vilna Gaon, the Pasuk in our Parsha. Because Yaakov is now being told to give up another son, Binyamin. And Yaakov says to himself, wait a second. My mother made me a promise. The promise was Alai, that only three bad things would happen to me, Esav, Lavan, and Yosef. There was no Aliv, it was not Binyamin also. And so therefore, the Pasuk says, Alai, Hayu, Chulana. In other words, the Alai has already happened to me. The Esav, Lavan, and Yosef has already happened to me. There shouldn't be another tragedy that is befalling me. And that, says the Vilna Gaon, is the conversation that's taking place here. So if you look here in the third underline, he says, Acha kavanahi, ki Rivka hodiya liYaakov shelo yivol tzaros ki'im gimel elu. Rivka promised him only three bad things would happen, aramazim b'milas alai, that are alluded to in the word alai. And they are tzaros Esav, tzaros Lavan, and tzaros Yosef. And therefore, Next underline, Lai Hayu Chulana, wrote to Lomar, what was Yaakov upset about? He says, wait a second, it was only supposed to be these three things and none others, and that's why Yaakov doesn't understand why Binyamin was going to be taken. That's the Vilna Gaon. It's a very beautiful idea. Why do I love this idea so much? Because when it's quoted by later, so for example, Rav Asher Weiss quotes this in his Haggadah. Rav Eliel Schlesinger quotes this in his Sefer Areshes Vaseinu, the Rav of Gilo. And they all, in various formulations, say the same thing. That this wasn't just an allusion to the tragedies that Yaakov would face in his lifetime. But Yaakov is a metaphor for the Jewish people. I'm sorry. Yaakov is a metaphor for the Jewish people. And therefore, the same way Yaakov faces an Esav, a Lavan, and a Yosef, we, the Jewish people throughout our history, are going to face an Esav, a Lavan, and a Yosef. What's the difference between them? So here again, whether it's Rav Eliel Schlesinger, Rav Asher points it out in his Haggadah, different formulations, but the similar idea. What did Esav want to do to Yaakov? He wanted to physically kill him. Lavan never tries to physically kill Yaakov. What does he try to do? Spiritually. Im Lavan garti vitariag mitzvah shamarti. Right? It was more of a spiritual attack. Yosef was what? What was the tragedy of Yosef predicated on? What caused it? Sinas chinam. The hatred amongst the brothers. Now I saw in the Areshes Vaseinu, Rav Eliel Schlesinger, the Rav of Gilo, says the following. He says, if you think about it, we have holidays for Esav. They try to kill us, we survived. What holiday do we use to commemorate that in rabbinic terms? Purim. Purim. Pesach, right? They tried to kill us, we survived. That was the Esav. Lavan. When do they try to spiritually destroy us and we survived? Chanukah. The holiday that we're celebrating right now. What holiday do we have commemorating the Yud of Yosef? Says Rav Eliel Schlesinger, there isn't one. You know why? Because while our history is, we've shown that we can overcome the Esavs, and we can overcome the Lavans, we can overcome the external enemies that try to physically destroy us, and we can overcome the external enemies that try to spiritually destroy us, there's one area we have not yet proven that we can get right, and that is the Yosef, the Sinas Chinam. And therefore, while there are holidays on the Jewish calendar that celebrate the Ayin of Esav and celebrate the Lamed of Lavan, there is not yet a holiday on the calendar that celebrates the Yud of Yosef. That's going to be Mashiach. That's going to be the rebuilding of the third base of Mikdash. And that says, the Vilna Gaon is how you understand this very clumsy pasuk of Alai Hayu Chulana. What is Yaakov talking about? The answer is, it's an allusion back to his mother. That his mother, all the way back in Parshas Toldos, I guess, says, Alai Kilas Chabani, that there are only three things that are going to happen to you, Esav, Lavan, and Yosef. And therefore Yaakov says, whoa, Binyamin's not on the list. It shouldn't have been counted. I shouldn't have to go this tragedy. And then we took it to the next level and said, this corresponds to us, our stature as the Jewish people, that we've had enemies like Esav, we've had enemies that tried to physically destroy us, we've had enemies like Lavan that tried to spiritually destroy us, and we've defeated both of them. We have holidays to commemorate them, Purim and Chanukah. But you know what we haven't yet cracked the code to? Honestly, probably the simplest of them all, and that is how to get along with each other. I once heard a line about Sinas Chinam, that it's simple but not easy, which I think is so deep and profound. And simple but not easy. It's so simple, but that doesn't mean it's easy, right? There are a lot of things in life that are simple but not easy. Like you tell your kid to clean up after them at the dinner table. It's so simple. Just do it. But it doesn't make it easy, right? So getting along also, such a simple concept. There's so many brachas that are attributed to getting along with one another. And yet, 2,000 plus years, that's something we have not yet cracked the code to. That is how the Vilna Gaon and others explain this pasuk of Alai Hayu Chulana. It's really a reference to this notion of a Sinas Chinam. It's a reminder of what brought the Jewish people down to Mitzrayim, why they had to stay there for hundreds of years, and please God, what's going to take us out of this exile as well. That is idea number one from the Vilna Gaon. Idea number two comes from the Sefer Toras Barnash. And he writes here the following beautiful idea. Toras Barnash says that if you look at the beginning of the Parshas, the beginning of the Parsha opens up, of course, Paro has his dreams. And what's the dream number one? So the pasuk tells us, Uparo cholein vihine omeid ala yor. He's standing on the river. Then, when it comes to later on, in Paro's telling over the dream to Yosef, what does it tell him? He says, "Vayidaber paro Yosef b'chalomi hinni omeid al svas hayor." Now, al hayor means what?
On the river.
Al svas hayor means what?
River.
On the riverbank. Are the river and the riverbank the same things? Now, again, if you and I were talking, we would say, okay, we assume that means the same thing. But we're in the Torah, and the Torah doesn't mistake words. So obviously, if in one, he's standing on the river, and in one, he's standing next to the river, there's obviously a message to that. So here he quotes, again, this Sefer Toras Barnash. No, I do not learn the Sefer Toras Barnash every Thursday in preparation for the Shir. I forgot where I saw it quoted, but I saw it quoted somewhere, and it sounded like an interesting idea, so I looked it up. And he writes here the following. He says, "Nearly de Bemedrash Rabbah." He quotes the Medrash. Amar of Yochanan, Harishaim miskaimim al Elokeichem. The Rishaim consider themselves on top of God. In other words, they consider themselves above God. How does he know that? How does the Medrash know that? Because it quotes the Pasuk in our Parsha. Uparo cholem hine omeid al hayor. Paro is standing on top of the Nile River. Aval atzadikim, but the tzadikim, they're not on top of God. Rather, Elohim miskayim alehem. They are under God. God is on top of them. How does he know that? Because the pasuk says, "Vine Hashem nitzav alav vayomer ani Hashem Elokei Avram." Parshas Vayetze, when Yaakov wakes up and he realizes that it's a holy place, and he sees that Hashem is standing over him. So as opposed to Paro, that is standing on the river, says the Medrash, Yaakov, it's Hashem who's standing on top of him. And then if you go to page 3, he says the following. What does this all mean? He says, Akavanahi, the interpretation of this is as follows. Ki arasha hu ohev es atzmo. Arasha loves himself. Now, no one's going to admit to loving themselves, but what does it mean that arasha loves himself? It means that he lives life in service to himself. Okay? He wakes up in the morning, and every physical and material pursuit he has is for his own personal benefit. So whether it's the house, the car, the clothes, the closet, the toys, the gadgets, it's all for his own service, right? Everything in life is to serve himself. And therefore, even when it's under the guise of serving Hashem, what is it really for? It's for serving him. And therefore, he says in the second line, V'rach machmas sho'ev es atzmo, lachein hu'ove lelokav. It's because he loves himself sometimes that he also serves God. And again, we have this sometimes, that people do things in Judaism that's not driven out of a love for Hashem, but that's driven out of ego. Okay, sometimes it's tzedakah that a person gives, where they're not giving it lishma, but they're doing it because they want someone to think that they're a gavra, they want someone to think that they're a macher, and that they're a, you know. Sometimes people, the way they daven is not a reflection of pure intention, but it's a reflection of self-love, in promoting that sense of self-love. And you have that in a number of different areas. So Rishayim, they're not going through life thinking about God first. They go through life thinking about themselves first. And sometimes God fits into that equation, but it's only vis-a-vis them serving themselves. I heard an unbelievable podcast, which I do not recommend for a variety of reasons, so I won't tell you who the podcast was, but it was Tim Ferriss, who's one of my favorite interviewers. No, I'm not saying who he was interviewing. He was interviewing a woman, and it was the most disturbing podcast ever. I actually called Rabbi Goldberg right afterwards because I was so disturbed by it. I needed to talk it out with someone. And the whole thing was about, she basically had a religion for herself. And even though she spoke about God in the interview, it was only vis-a-vis like her own pleasure. And so therefore, even when she talked about God, she was like, but my vision of God has to be that he's okay with what I do and the choices that I make and how I live my life. And I remember thinking to myself, I was like so disturbed. It's so backwards. Right, you live in service of God. It's not that God lives in service of fitting himself into how you construct your life. And that's exactly what he's writing here. Right, even someone who has a relationship with Hashem, it's only in the context of my personal benefit, joy, understanding of how I'm supposed to live my life. And therefore he says, V'zesh Amar Rav Yochanan. This is what the Medrash means when it says, Ki arasha omeid al elokav. That a Russia stands on top of God. Yan ki atzmo choshe beinav yotzer me'elokav. Because who does he put first? Him or Hashem? He puts himself first. He wakes up in the morning. He's not thinking about how he can serve God. He wakes up in the morning and thinks, how can I serve my own needs, wants, and desires? And then I'm going to fit Hashem in my Judaism into that construct. It's a totally backwards understanding. He says, and now we understand what the pasuk means when it says Paro standing al hayor, because in Egypt, the Nile River was what? Was a god, right? And if Paro is standing al hayor, this is a representation of the Medrash that Paro viewed himself as on top of God. It was him, and then God fit under him. This is a pasuk in Yechezkel explicitly. The pasuk says, of course, you should never start quoting a pasuk until you know you can quote it. Because otherwise, instead of impressing people, you do the opposite. But I believe the pasuk says, right, Li Yeori Ve'ani Asitini. You'll look that up and tell me if I'm right. But it's I'm pretty close. Okay? Li Yeori Ve'ani Asitini. Paro says, Li Yeori, the Nile River is mine. Ve'ani Asitini. And I made the Nile River. In other words, it's a reflection of Paro saying, the Nile is in service to me. I'm not in service to the Nile River. And that's how you understand the opening pasuk of the Parsha. Vine omeid al hayor, he's standing on the river. If that's the case, then what happens? Because by the time Paro says the dream over to Yosef, where's Paro standing? He's no longer on the river, like Muhammad and others. Where's he standing? Standing next to the river. What brought him next to the river? So he says here the following. He says when he asks Yosef to interpret the dream, what does Yosef say? Biladai Elokim Yaneh Shlom Paro. Who's going to interpret the dream, says Yosef? He says, it's not me. It's God who's going to interpret it. And Paro hears that. And Paro immediately recalibrates everything. And he realizes that it's not about him, but it's about Hashem. And therefore he says in the last two lines, all the way at the bottom, he says, V'lachein, he skilled Paro as piv. Paro kind of like changes his language. Velo amar hinani omeid al yor. And he no longer says, I'm standing on the river. Ela hinani omeid al sfat yor. Now he's only next to the river. Leman lo yisra'a ki'ish ha-misnasei begon levavo lomar shu omeid alokav. Because he learned from the way Yosef spoke. He learned from the way that Yosef put Hashem first. And therefore, based on that, Paro changes the way he speaks as well. So it's a beautiful understanding. I think there's a lot of content in there about how we relate to Hashem. Do we really put Hashem first, or do we put ourselves first and then fit Hashem into our understanding of how my needs, wants, and pleasures? Chassidus talks about this a lot. I'd have to say, if you had to like define the core value of Chassidus thought, it's the notion of bittul. Bittul is the essence of Chassidus. Why? Because bittul essentially means that you have to be mevatel yourself to Hashem, that Hashem is everything, and our job in life is to nullify our ego so much that it's only God, and I only exist in service of Hashem. That was the opposite of Paro. Paro put himself first. Paro put his own needs, his own ego, his own wants, and his own desires first. And it's only when he hears Yosef speak in a different way does he change his language, which I love also, because according to this, what it means is that if you speak a certain way, then you could take even the biggest Rasha and you can change their narrative. You could change the way they think about Hashem. You could change the way they think about God in the world. Right? Even Paro, even one of the most wicked people in history, by hearing Yosef speak in a certain way, referencing Hashem, talking about his Judaism, showcasing Jewish pride, whatever manifestation you want to apply that to in your own personal or work life, you could change people. You could change the way people think. And you could change the way people talk. And you could change the way they relate to God. So much so that even Paro recalibrates the way he talks about Hashem based solely on a comment that Yosef makes. And that reminds us that the power that we have in the way that we speak, in the way that we conduct ourselves, in the way that we interact in business or in the office or, right, we have the ability to model for people what a healthy, genuine, sincere relationship with Hashem looks like. That it's not God in service of me, but it's me who's in service of God. So that's idea number two. Again, idea number one was the beautiful idea of the Vilna Gaon. Alai Hayu Chulana. Alai is an acronym for Esav, Lavan, and Yosef. That for Esav, we've conquered. Lavan, we've conquered. Yosef, we're still waiting for that third holiday with the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. Second idea is the Torah's Barnash. This beautiful idea of Al HaYor versus Al Sfas HaYor. How Paro views his relationship with Hashem. Is it Hashem's in service of him, or is he in service of Hashem? And the power that we have to change someone's understanding of what a genuine relationship with Hashem should look like. Last idea comes from the Divrei Elimelech, Rav Elazar Mizansk. And he writes the following. You see, I have two arrows because I arrowed the wrong paragraph at first. So my OCD side of me said, of course I have to recopy it because I can't, like, seeing the X on the page is going to drive me crazy. But then I thought of those poor trees in the Amazon, and I said, I have to have Rachmanis on them. So we just have an X, and we'll go to the bottom. Okay,
why
here we are.
Why did you use whiteout?
I should have. Okay. Because then I have mercy on all the chemicals that I would be breathing in. Okay. So here we go. So we have here the Yosef, of course, goes down to Egypt. And Yosef is the ultimate rags-to-riches story. Of course, he is at the... Remember we discussed last week the imagery of being in a pit and being lifted out of the pit. And all of a sudden, Yaakov sends his sons to Egypt. And what do they find? V'Yosef hu ha-shalit ala aretz, hu ha-mashbir l'chol am ha-aretz. So Yosef is the shalit. Shalit is a ruler over the land. And then he is the mashbir. A mashbir is the provider over all of the people of the land. And then the brothers come to Yosef, and they bow down to the ground. I'll share with you a parenthetical comment, which has nothing to do with the Dvar Torah I'm about to share, but I saw it this week, so this is a bonus idea. This is a bonus idea for coming. But I forgot who I saw this in the name of. Okay. I don't know. I'm sure someone will find it and correct me. But I saw this beautiful idea. Yosef's entire life is bookended by dreams. Right, the first part of his life is the dreams at the beginning of the whole story, where the brothers bowing down, the sun, the moon, the sheaves, the whatever. And then, this parsha is the end of the story, and once again, you have dreams. Paro's the dreams, the butler and the baker's dreams. And yet, if you think about it, they're very similar, and yet couldn't be more different. The first set of dreams, what happens to Yosef as a result of the dreams? Everything bad. It's like bad to worse. Second set of dreams, what happens to Yosef as a result of the dreams? He goes from rags to riches. So what was the difference? First set of dreams were catastrophic. Second set of dreams ended up Yosef as the viceroy of Egypt. What was the difference between the two of them? You ever think about this? Why?
The audience.
What was the audience? Yeah, Coop?
Difference. His brothers versus...
Okay, why would that make a difference? Because brothers are impossible.
Envy.
What? Envy. Good. Okay, what do you think?
His dreams versus other dreams.
Yeah?
The first time he put himself forward, and the second time he was effacing and let Paro...
Exactly. That's the idea I saw. That if you look at the first set of dreams, it was all about Yosef. It was all about him and him and him. By the second set, it's not his dreams. What's he doing? He's helping other people. And I saw this idea that when all you dream about is yourself, and you put your ego first, it's going to end up in a catastrophic fashion. But if your dreams and your goals and your aspirations and everything you live for is not in service of yourself, but in service of helping other people, that has the ability to lift you up. Even if you're in the bottom of a pit, it has the ability to lift you up. I thought that was such a beautiful idea.
Also,
but
also, when you're dealing with an autocrat, it has to be his idea.
His idea. And therefore, what?
By you face yourself.
You have to face yourself. Right. I actually thought that this ties very much into, we saw this a few weeks ago about the Ish. Remember the two Ishes. What was doing in the Ish and Vayishlach and the Ish and Vayeshev. In Vayishlach, all he was doing was taking care of himself. And in Vayeshev, he was asking to help someone else. And we said that was the difference. Anyways, that was the bonus idea. Okay, but here we go back to this idea. The Yosef hu ha-shalit al aretz. And then it says, hu ha-mashbir. So asks the Divrei Elimelech. He says the following. What does it mean, hu ha-shalit? Al-Haretz. Do you really need both parts of the Pasuk? Why does it first have to say, Hu ha-shalit al-Haretz, and then, Hu ha-mashbir l'chol am-Haretz? Like, I could have said one of them and inferred the other. You didn't need to say both of them. And therefore, he interprets it in a classic Hasidic way. He says the following. What does Aretz refer to? Aretz doesn't just mean land in the literal interpretation. Artziut in...
Physicality.
Right? Physicality. So what does it mean, V'Yosef, hu ha-shalit al ha-aretz? Yosef was in control over his yetzirah. He was in control over his material needs. Materialism didn't control him, but rather, he was in control of materialism. Now this, by the way, Dayenu, is a perfect conversation for the Shabbos table this week. You'll be 3 days into Hanukkah, just at the point where your kids and grandkids are getting spoiled rotten. It's an important reminder to pause and to remember the role that materialism and gifts and things that we want play in our lives? Does it control us, or do we control it? That's why every year we always designate right around the middle a night. Some of my kids like it more than others, but instead of giving them a gift, what we do is we give each child a certain amount of money, and they have to go online, and together as a family, we research tzedakahs that they want to give the money to. So it's a gift that keeps on giving. In other words, I teach them that it's not just about what you get and the gifts that you get throughout Hanukkah, but one of the nights we spend in giving to other people. And part of my whole chinuch in it is to walk my children through the process of what it looks like to give tzedakah. How do you choose to give tzedakah? If you have, I'm just picking a number, not that I give this to each of my kids, but let's say you have $1,000, right? So do you give it to one tzedakah and make a bigger impact? Do you split it amongst 10 tzedakahs and give $100 to each? You know, there aren't many opportunities to engage children in those types of conversations. And that could really be at any level, in any age group. So that's one of the nights of Hanukkah that we do. But this is exactly what the Noah Melech Melech is talking about. Hu atzadik shiyehu sholeit al yitzro. That he was in control of his yetzer hara in the materialism. Hu asholeit al haaretz. On the artziut. It's not in control of him. And therefore, if you go to the next page, page number 5, it says, top line, v'zeh yeh al haaretz. That it means that Yosef was able to control himself. I'm actually reading this amazing book now that's called The Pursuit of Happiness. It's sparked by actually an off the record we had a number of months ago when we got in a vigorous debate about whether happiness is a Jewish value. I don't know if you guys remember that. But there was one member of our shul who got very upset at me afterwards, and he said, of course happiness is a Jewish value. And he said, it says on top of your Aron, Yivdu'as Hashem b'simcha. So I said, that's not really what happiness is. Then we had a whole conversation about the founding fathers, pursuit of happiness. Right, fine. So anyways, I saw a book called Pursuit of Happiness. And I was so intrigued by it. So I took it out of the library. Let's just say it's not bedtime reading. It's a little dense. But one of the things that it goes through is how the founding fathers were really in lifelong pursuits of controlling their desires and controlling whether it was sleep habits, reading habits, other types of eating habits. The founding fathers were constantly struggling with them. The most famous example of that is Benjamin Franklin. Franklin with his 13 mantras of things that he was going to conquer, and he had a whole system that he was going to take basically one mida a week. And the Sefer, Cheshbon HaNefesh, was modeled after Benjamin Franklin's 13 things that he was trying to conquer. Right, so everyone from the founding fathers to the Noam Elimelech and Yosef in between, they were all trying to control that we live in a very material world. We live in a very physical world where it's very easy to get drawn in and to get sucked into the materialism. So our job is to control it. That he explains the first half of the pasuk. That wasn't the part that excited me as much. It's the second part of what he says that excited me a lot. What does it mean, therefore, hu amashpir l'chol amaretz? Remember, our question was, why do you need both? If he was in control of the land, why didn't he tell me that he's also the provider for the land? The answer is, what does it mean he's the provider? A mashpir is very similar, he says, in the Hebrew language to the language of the word mashpia. What does it mean to be a mashpia? A mashpia means that in Judaism there's a receiver, and then there is a mashpia. There's one who's giving off. There's one who's influencing. So in, you know, for example, Rav Volbi has a sefer on for chasanim, for newlyweds. And he describes, he says how when you're single, when you're up until your point where you're like building a family, he says, so you're in like, when you're in your teens, all you care about is taking. But then you get to a certain stage in life when you transition from a taker to a mashpia. You now realize that you are in charge of other people. You are now overflowing for other people. So you need to fill yourself up, not just for yourself, but to be able to overflow for other people. And therefore, says the Noam Elimelech, this is what our pasuk is understanding. Let's read it. The Yosef hu ha-shalit al ha'aretz. Yosef conquered himself. Because Yosef worked on himself. And because he worked on himself, hu ha-mashbir l'chol ha'aretz. Therefore, he was able to what? He was able to influence other people as well. Right in the classic example on the airplane where they tell you if the masks come down, what do? You have to put your own mask before you take care of other people. So it's first that Yosef perfects himself. And because he perfects himself, what is he able to do? He's able to influence the world around him. So look at the Noam Elimelech, because he says it much better than I just did. He says, "Ba'achar kach." Once Yosef works on himself, and work on yourself, by the way, can mean different things to different people. For some, it means working on anger. For some, it can mean working on fitting learning into your schedule. For some, it can mean working on davening. For some, it might mean being less impulsive. For everyone, it's going to be a different thing. But when you work on something, no different than Benjamin Franklin's 13 things. Right? By the way, it started off as 12. He added on a 13th, which he failed miserably at. But that's not for this year, because children listen to this. But there was a 13th that he didn't do a good job at, and it was Arias. Right? If you ever wonder why we read about Gili Arias on Yom Kippur afternoon, right? It's because not everyone was always successful at that. Okay? But now listen to Noam Elimelech. Because Yosef worked on himself, now he was able to influence other people. Because what's the real job of a person? Which is a nice way of saying, we have no idea the impact of our actions. We have no idea the impact that we have, not just on the people that we see, but the people that we don't see and in the cosmic realm. So you do a mitzvah. Okay, maybe my children are watching, maybe they're not watching. So I go to shul, maybe my grandchildren are paying attention, maybe they're not paying attention. But even beyond that, there's influence we're having in a cosmic sense, in ways that we can't even fathom, right? And that's what it says, V'lachein hu ha-mashpir ha-mashpia, and that's what it means, that Yosef was not just impacting himself, and he was not just impacting Mitzrayim, but he had a cosmic impact. That when we work on ourselves, we have no idea the impact that it's going to have. I had a crazy story here on Elul. I'll tell you the story because it had such an impact on me, and I wasn't even involved in the story. But there's a guy who used to not come to Minyan. I noticed he started coming to Minyan. He davens at our early Minyan at BRS. And I know just by knowing him that it was really hard for him to get to the early Minyan. But he, at some point, I never spoke to him about it, but at some point, I know he decided to go to the early Minyan. Okay, hold that thought. Then, and I'm going over time, I apologize. Then, a little while in Elul, I'm talking to someone else, and the person was telling me like things they're going to work on. They said to themselves, they said to me, they said, you know, Rabbi, I'm making a commitment next year that I want to go to Minyan. I said, that's amazing. Like, you know, what inspired you? They said, every day I see this guy, or, you know, and this guy is no different than I am, and yet I see that he makes it an effort to go to Minyan. And if he goes every morning, then I decide I want to go to morning also. Okay, I thought to myself, it's so beautiful. He saw person A, person B saw person A, was inspired by person A, so he decided to make a Kabbalah and to go to Minyan. That's not the crazy part of the story. Crazy part of the story is that it must have been Erev Rosh Hashanah. I was texting back and forth with person A. And person A said to me something along the lines of, you know, I've been pushing myself all year. I'm exhausted. I'm tired. And I don't even know if I'm getting anything out of it. My kids don't even notice. My wife is annoyed that I wake her up early in the morning sometimes. Like, I'm just going to throw in the towel. It's not making a difference. What does it matter? And I literally called him up. I said, I have to tell you the craziest story. I said, you think it doesn't? I said, I literally, a week ago, had a conversation with someone who used you as the example of the person that was inspiring them, and they're going to change themselves because of you. By the way, it's 100% a true story. So person A does something. Person B watches person A, and therefore wants to change himself. Person A gets frustrated, says to me, Rabbi, what's the whole point? It's making no difference. No one's paying attention. And then I have to tell person A that person B was changing himself because of the way. And person A literally we cried on the phone. It was the most amazing thing. And he said, you know what? I'm sticking with it, and I'm going to keep going. Right? That is exactly what the Noam Elimelech is saying. Right? Yosef, who shalit al aretz. Yosef worked on himself. And again, for everybody, that's going to be different. It could be everything from anger to Shmir Seinayim to going to Minyan to making time for learning to dieting. It could be whatever you want. But when you work on yourself, you don't just impact you and influence yourself and your family, but hu amashbir l'chol ha'amaretz. You have the ability to make an impact far wider than sometimes you even realize. And that's how the Noam Elimelech understands that pasuk. And it's the second half of that pasuk that makes me so excited, because it reminds us that we are not just responsible for ourselves, but our actions influence other people. The way we conduct ourselves, our behavior, the way we speak, the way it has an impact, l'chol ama aretz, to people that we're not always aware of altogether. So we had three ideas in 34 minutes, I'm sorry, but I threw in a an addendum. So that was the extra 4 minutes. Idea number, doesn't matter, because everyone listening to this, I realized, I should call the shiur 3 ideas in, 20 minutes on time and a half speed. Because no one's really listening to me on real, right? It's either double speed or 1.5 speed. So we have, first, the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon's idea of Alai Hayu Chulana. Alai was the acronym. We have idea number 2 from the Torah's Barnash, the difference between Al Hayor and Al Sfas Hayor. It's not God in service of our needs, but it's us in service of God. And the last idea is a reminder that we have an impact far beyond what we ever realize. Hu HaShalit Ala Aretz, when you work on yourself, Hu HaMashbir L'chol Amaretz, then you become the Mashbia, you become the one who's influencing everybody else. And with that, I wish you a Freilich HaChanukah and a good Shabbat.